This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here, or just Bob and Dave right now. Opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. Got an abbreviated show coming up because you got Cougar basketball happening today at 5:30. We'll turn you over to Cougar basketball.
Do you really think this is an appropriate day to take a shot at me?
Did I take a shot?
Yeah, you did. You said Bob and Dave, and I was talking to...
This is 2 days in a row.
I was talking to one of our superiors, Kyle Brown, fellow Coug, and he's one of the bosses around here.
Ah, so, well, go ahead. Maintain that conversation.
Yeah, it's kind of strange to me that you would bring that up on a day which you were a little tardy for an interview that we taped with Jeff Schwartz.
So. I know, I was. Yeah.
So go ahead and fire away.
Pot, meat, kettle. Here it is. Coming up today, Jeff Schwartz will join us at 5 o'clock. The Professor John Clayton will be with us at 4 o'clock, as he is each and every day. And again, a bit of an abbreviated show. We got Cougar basketball coming up at 5:30, so we'll turn you over to that. But Russell Wilson has been a big topic. It's been a big topic in relation to Pete Carroll, that somehow Pete Carroll... I'm actually surprised this has become such a big conversation. I'm hearing it everywhere, not just here on this station. You're hearing it nationally. Is Pete Carroll holding Russell Wilson back? Then that leads to, is Pete Carroll the right guy for the job anymore? And, you know, because there's so many brilliant minds out there on the streets that are ready to coach football, that are just waiting to be plucked out of obscurity and brought into a situation where they can really flourish and bring a team to prominence that's otherwise being held back by a know-nothing dinosaur, right? Is that what I'm to believe here?
Well, and it's funny to me, and we'll talk to Jeff Schwartz at 5 o'clock, but one of the bylines on, you know, for his podcast or whatever. First of all, I like him.
Yeah.
I like this guy, Jeff Schwartz. I think he's
got opinions.
He's kind of a lovable lunk, you know, a little bit.
Is he kind of drunk?
Because he's an offensive lineman, you know. Yeah, maybe a little bit. But he has good opinions.
My favorite part of the interview, and you're going to want to hear this at 5 o'clock, wasn't necessarily the answers that Jeff Schwartz gave us. It was one of the questions that Dave asked him, and yet you forgot what you wanted to ask
I was
him.
So busy attacking him as an offensive lineman and a cheater that I forgot about what I was going to ask him. But, tune in for that. It'll be great.
That's a great moment.
Yeah, but one of the bylines he has is, Russell Wilson's continually held back by conservative coaching. Like, wait, first of all, you're paying attention to Russell now? Because, you know, that is, he's not gotten the respect. And now all of a sudden, and for Jeff, and look, maybe he's, you know, paying attention closely here, but he's like, well, I think he's the best deep ball thrower in the league. Like, yeah.
That's become a popular opinion.
Kind of know that. And that's kind of what we've heard from, you know, Schottenheimer loved that. And that was the reason why they threw so much in those first two games when he had his shiny new toy at the beginning of 2018. So, yeah, I mean, this is something that I think everybody here knows. But nationally, first of all, it was disrespect, and now it's, oh, he's not getting the proper coaching, and he needs to throw more. And the other thing is, you know, they threw it 31 times, but, you know, there was actually, he dropped back to pass 38 times.
Yeah.
And he ran on those plays, so that made it 38-17, rather, run to pass.
I'm with a lot of the people in that I'd like to see them be more aggressive, and that doesn't mean more passes. It's about where you throw those passes. It's about the timing of it, right? Where maybe it's in the first quarter. Maybe it's when it's you didn't come up with anything on first down for whatever reason, and second and 10, and you hand the ball off and you gain a yard. Those are the moments I'd say, you know what, maybe try to get a chunk of yardage. I'm not saying you need to throw it 30 yards down the field, but maybe you throw a little slant and you pick up 6 yards or 7 yards and you make it third and short. Because then all of a sudden it feels like they get behind schedule. That's the other popular phrase. You're behind schedule every time. And they do that a lot, and it feels like they're sort of beating their head into the wall with the running game at times. The down and distance doesn't favor that play when it hasn't been working yet. They'll stick with it there.
I'll point out a couple of times where Pete has been aggressive, though,
and certainly has
modern.
Now is it Pete
that's, modernized?
Here's the other thing: are we pointing to Pete when maybe it's Schottenheimer or how? Right. Because I don't think any of us really know how involved Pete is in the play calling. We know it's coming through his head. Yes, we know he's hearing it.
Sure.
He's got the power to veto it if he said, no, I want to run here. I want to pass.
I'll bet he's highly involved in that.
Oh, absolutely.
You think as the game is going on, hey, it's second and eight.
Well, Schottenheimer knows what he wants to do.
Well, but it's his offense.
And I'm sure that Pete, if he has a strong feeling, he's going to say, but, you know, on the other hand, you hire good people to do what they do. And if that's you trust in him, and you have to trust in him. But a couple of things. What about the punt that they ran? The fake punt was against Minnesota, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with Homer getting
with Travis
snap.
Homer on fourth down. I remember saying you got stones, and then he said something after
confirming that
the next morning, confirming that. Yeah, and then you know what about the throw to DK Metcalf, and it's a playoff game, and it's third and long, and you know you need to grind the clock down, and their offense wasn't playing that well.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they still, you could have played that conservative and said, all right, I'm going to punt it away with my all pro punter after I run a, you know, just a run to get, you know, 4 or 5 yards in space. What were they back on their own? Like 10.
Yeah. They were
on
deep the 10, in their own
12 yard
yeah.
line. So, and you know, you throw a 30 yard pass to a rookie, you know, you threw it up for grabs. So he's been aggressive at times. And I think we, and Jim, you always say this, nobody ever pays attention when it works, when you go for it and works. But if you go for it and it doesn't work, then you're an idiot. Why didn't you run the ball, and why didn't you try to grind out the clock? So, you know, there's a lot of those situations, too, where they are taking some chances. But it's just funny to me that all of a sudden it's like everybody has discovered the talent of Russell Wilson. And so kind of like Schottenheimer in those first two games that he called in 2018, you wanted him to do everything. And, you know, this was a good wasn't the same running game, certainly, going into the playoffs, but all year long they had one of the top five running games in the NFL.
Yeah, it's just it's interesting. Pete's come under fire here, and the buck stops with the head coach. But prior to this, it was Bevel doesn't know what he's doing. It was Bevel was the devil, and Bevel is a moron. He doesn't know anything.
Yeah, we haven't heard that about Schottenheimer yet, but I'm sure we're closing in on that.
Maybe. Is it just
a grace period right now? Yeah, because he's as dumb as Bevel.
Is he?
Yeah, all the offensive coordinators, when the plays don't work, yeah, they're stupid.
It's just interesting.
Them.
It's blame
it's amazing to me. I just sit here and sorry to interrupt you, Bob, but I just
I don't think you are.
Well, yeah, I kind of am. I think I might have. Well, I was reading Bob Condotta's story in the Seattle Times today, and he was talking about this issue of boy, you know, the second half they're better than they are in the first half, and maybe they need to open it up, unleash Russell Wilson, all these different things. And he did point out that they had 32 touchdowns in the second half this year to 23 in the first half. But he also pointed out that, you know, for anyone who thinks, man, they're just run, run, pass. Well, that's not the case. He looked at Pro Football Reference. They actually passed at a higher percentage in the first half this season than they did in the second. So, yeah, and then what are you going to do? So let's say you go up-tempo and you start doing that, and then your defense is out there. You didn't want that defense on the field all that long this year.
No.
They were no fun to watch for the most part. So what are you going to do? Go up tempo, and then there'd be people complaining about the Seahawks scored too quickly, and the defense got fatigued. So what do you want? What do you want? And so then you know that Pete Carroll is not going to change his philosophy. You just already know that. So what are you even complaining about? So if you are complaining, and if you feel like we've reached the point where, hey, they got to get rid of Pete Carroll, are you kidding me? I mean, this guy's a Hall of Fame coach.
He's the best coach in the history of this organization, and it's not close.
And so they're talking like he's
trash.
With all
due respect to Holmgren,
I just sit there and I go, yeah, I don't get it. And I was telling Dave, I go, you know, it sounds like a Homer take on it, but I just don't see why people are complaining so much. And what are you going to be happy if Pete Carroll's fired?
No. I'd like to know what the better option is out there. Again, we can want
fire
would you
coach
like to
who went 11-5 with all those injuries and that defense.
You want to be a Bears fan?
Personnel,
you want to be a Browns fan? You want to be a fan of one of these teams, the Dolphins? They switch coaches every other year, and they just sit there and mired it at best mediocrity. They get excited when they have a 7-win season. I mean, come on, help yourself. If that looks more appealing to you because they got a new name that you hadn't heard, Freddie Kitchens, hey, this is going to be great, or hey, what's going on in Miami? What's going on? Don't get tired of winning. I'll go back to what Graz said. Don't get tired of winning. It doesn't mean he does everything perfect. He does not. But we do have the myopic view where we look at every play of every game, every moment is dissected. We don't do that with every other coach. I'm sure if we were to sit in Chicago or sit in Cleveland or sit in Cincinnati or Carolina, or what you name the city, we could sit there and go, what are they doing with the timeout? Why would he call that play? Why would you throw it to that guy? Why didn't you do this? It's not unique to Seattle. Yeah. People feel like we've got problems that don't exist elsewhere. It's not unique. It just is not. We watched the Packers burn through all three of their timeouts, and I think there was 9 minutes left in the first half, and they blew through all three of them. I'm sitting there going, wow, if that were Pete, Twitter would be going absolutely bananas right now.
Well, one of them was the challenge. So
right,
you give
you
him
still,
a break on that one.
Well,
on
it would have been, why
Hollister
would you challenge
non-fumble.
He would have been ripped for challenging it.
Well, I'll say this, though, to be fair, that's something that's kind of followed Pete a little bit. You know, they didn't get up to the line of scrimmage in the NFC Championship
game. Oh, he's hurt.
The same thing in, you know, just to be fair. I mean,
he's earned it. I'm not saying he's perfect. I mean, the 49er game was classic, taking the delay game. I mean, that's inexcusable.
Well, in Super Bowl 49, too, you know, when Kirst made that catch, they should have got up to the line and everything. And, you know, is that 100% on Pete? Well, it all falls on him because, you know, fact is that's probably not his job. You know, he probably delegates, you know, guys to do certain things, and, you know, and I'd put some of it on Russell too, but yeah, that there has been a little bit of that with Pete Carroll, but you just can't argue with the success. And if you look back, going back to 2010, and it goes a lot further back for the Patriots, but the top franchises as far as making the playoffs, I can't remember the number, but it goes, you know, I think the Packers have one more playoff appearance than the Seahawks since that, in that time, but it's New England, Green Bay, and very closely is the Seattle Seahawks as far as appearances, winning games, playing in the playoffs. So, I mean, it's working. And if you want to say, hey, look, I want to complain about it and nitpick because we're sitting home and we're not on the road in San Francisco, okay, that's fine. But as far as talking about, oh, he needs to be fired and you need to have these big wholesale changes, especially it bothers me, though, and I said it earlier, around when it's centered around Russell Wilson, who most people nationally didn't give the respect he deserved in the first place. And now you're saying, oh, he's being held back by Pete Carroll.
That's what an MVP run will do for you. It opened eyes. I mean, he was the MVP front runner for the first half of the season.
Can I tell you what would happen, too? It's just all speculation my part. If they did unleash Russell Wilson for 60 minutes, if they did that, that would leave him open to being injured more than he is right now. And so if he got hurt in the first half scrambling around, people would be going, man, they should have just stuck with the run first philosophy. So you can't win. I mean, it's a tough one to try and figure out.
And going back to 2017, I think that was the worst season that they've had. They were 9-7 in a long time. I mean, that's not a double digit win and not an appearance in the playoffs for the first time since going back to 2011, I think, Pete's second year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and what was the problem there? Russell was there was only one other guy that scored a touchdown. So you did put the entire thing on him, and he threw more than he'd ever thrown that year, and it didn't work. And going back to that formula, Jim, that we've talked about, that when he's throwing it 25 or under, he's 75% win percentage. And when he's not, it's more like, you know, 55, 60, same thing in the playoffs. So, you know, the formula has not really been for Russell Wilson to just let him throw the ball more. That's not what's happened. Cause I go again back to 2017 and that's where, you know, it just wasn't healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'll say this, you know, during the playoffs in Philadelphia, he was 95% of the offense. And I would normally say, yeah, that's dysfunctional. You got to fix that. But the running game disappeared. You had Marshawn Lynch and Travis Homer who did fine, but Russell in both of those games was the leading rusher.
Yep, they couldn't get anything done on the ground. And I'm not saying people shouldn't have. You should be able to critique. Pete is not perfect. He does make mistakes with the clock. He does make mistakes with timeouts. We could question where he decides to throw. I'm not a guy who's advocating for more passes. I'm just looking at the situations in which you choose to pass versus run. It's situational for me in terms of my complaints about him. But the idea that somehow this is a team that would be better off without him, that he's impeding their progress, he's a speed bump on their way to another Super Bowl, is mindless to me. That makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. None. Look at especially on the heels of this year. This year, they have never been more injured than they have this year under Pete Carroll. Never.
Well, that team with all the metrics that they have out there, I mean, that should have been an 8-8 team. Yes, I mean, come on. Maybe 9-7. We talked about the point differential all year. And like Dave, I mean, it's the first time we've really emphasized that. But it was crazy how good they were. 11-5 with all the injuries.
In the toughest
the defense
in
they had, no pass rush. I was looking back at the 2015 season here. That was the season where Jimmy Graham got hurt. And for everybody that wanted to see Russell unleashed, well, he was unleashed at the end of that season. You remember the last seven games, how many touchdown passes he was throwing to Baldwin?
34 that year.
And they averaged 30 points a game in the last seven or eight games of the season after Graham got hurt. And they had the same finish they had this year, where they got lucky to beat the Vikings because Blair Walsh missed that field goal. I think that was the game. Yeah, 10-9 they lost, and then they went to Carolina and got their doors blown off.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was looking at the pass attempts. The most pass attempts he's had in a year, 2017, and that was the 9-7 season. But he threw the ball a lot. He was a huge part of the offense, every touchdown except for one. And I think he led the league.
He did. In touchdown passes. 34 touchdowns.
With 34, and they scored 35 that year. And who was it, J.D. McKissick?
Yep.
That scored the other one. So, but as far as attempts go, that was 553 attempts that year. He threw 516 times this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is regular season numbers.
Yeah.
So,
he threw 546 in 2016. So those are his back-to-back biggest years in terms of throwing the ball.
Right. But, you know, it's not necessarily – I know it worked out pretty well in 16, but it certainly didn't work out in 2017. And so, to me, the best thing you can do for Russell – and first of all, I would say this. Russ is going into his ninth year.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you Pete is sitting down and talking to him about what would you like to see? What would you like to see more of? What should we do, when we should pass, the situations, things like that. And, you know, this may have been going on for years, but I'm sure Russell has some ideas. And why would you not ask him? I think every coach, quarterback tandem, like, you know, when it was McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers and that fell apart, but I'm sure it's that way with LaFleur. Certainly Brady and Belichick. I mean, I think Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, I'm sure, have those conversations. So, yeah, okay, fine. You go ahead and do that. But there's just little things in there, but it's not anything drastic. The other thing I keep going back to, this modernization, it's like you look at the running teams that are in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You know, and running is, I'd say you could consider that modern. But, you know, it works. It gets teams into the playoffs. But probably the best thing that could happen for Russ is to go out and get some defenders that can rush the passer and, you know, get him the ball back. Because, yeah, the defense this year just wasn't even close to what we'd become used to around here as far as the Pete Carroll defenses go.
Yeah, and I think they've got questions in front of him. I don't think every sack is the fault of the offensive line. Certainly that we see more than enough times where Russell holds onto the ball where you're going, throw it away, and he'll take a sack. He's not perfect. He makes mistakes out there. So not every sack is the fault of the O-line. Having said that, that's been a popular theme in his time here. You've had better lines at times, and at times it's been worse than what we've had this year. This year was taped together. I mean, you're talking about third-string left guards and guys that are fragile, and Dwayne Brown is hurt, and Jamarco Jones gets hurt, and Yapati's hurt, and Posick's nowhere to be seen, and no Jordan Simmons, and Britt is out. I mean, man, just the level of injury that they faced this year was unlike any other season. And I think people that are ripping Pete Carroll for not being more productive or creative, I think that limits how much you can actually do with Schottenheimer and Pete getting together going, hey, I'd like to run this kind of play, that kind of play, but look at who we have blocking up there. You need a certain level of ability up there in order to execute some of the plays that the 49ers do with their run game. And I don't think that the Seahawks had that luxury. I think they did the best with what they had taped together up front.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. And I also, Russell Wilson was sacked 48 times this year. And I don't know how many of those you blame on the offensive line and how many you blame on Russell for hanging on to it too long. Whatever your number is, I would come up with a big number too for how many sacks he avoided by his being so elusive.
Fair.
So I mean, you know, every time people complain about, oh boy, Russ held on to that too long, he should have gotten rid of it, I'm thinking, yeah, you might be right, but how about those other plays where he somehow got away from everybody, where another quarterback, like if it's 48 sacks this year for Russell Wilson, can you imagine another quarterback who's not as elusive as him? It would have been 60. Yeah. It just would have been crazy.
Well,
so
I was just going to make that point. I don't think other quarterbacks are going to try to do that even. I mean, they're going to dump the ball off or they're going to take a sack. And Aaron Rodgers has taken a lot of sacks. You know, he's had over 50 in a season. I mean, he's had over 52 times and then, you know, over 40 three or four times. But, you know, I was just going through and looking at it per game. And, you know, and I know it's a big number, but you look at the first 8 years of Aaron Rodgers, he was sacked 2.5 times a game. His last 8 years, and these overlap, 2.6 times per game. Russ is 2.7. So he is going to get sacked a little bit more, but that's because he has, and I think it's something he has to control, to the number of times where you're like, I can get out of this. And how many times have you seen him start to scramble and go, dude, just throw the ball away?
Mm-hmm.
He gets out of it and makes a play. So, yeah, you have to take into account that part of it. So I guess I would say I don't really worry about the sacks. Russ took a couple of sacks in that game. I don't know if you
hit hard.
Where his legs kind of split in an awkward way.
Yeah, he did the splits there. I was like, oh, man. And I keep thinking, oh, you don't want to tempt fate. But he certainly is able to take those hits. And a couple of times, I think Rabel and I both yelled, look out, from the booth on the two-point conversion. I was like, look out! Yeah, oh, coming off the edge.
You guys have a line into his headset there?
Apparently not. We were just screaming in vain. But, yeah, it's the sack part of it, I think, definitely is a product of Russell. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. He makes lots of plays, too.
We'll talk more about this. Again, Jeff Schwartz will be with us at 5 o'clock. He's got some opinions on how Pete Carroll is handling this offense with Russell Wilson and what he should be doing. But right now, let's take two.
Take two.
The Huskies will try to snap a two-game losing streak as they host Oregon State tonight at 8 p.m. and Wazoo takes on Oregon at 6 p.m.
Jim, ever since you touted UW as being pretty good and you were making a bet with Dave on his way out the door about...
Which bet was that?
Oh, that was the Stanford
game. You were going to bet his Christmas present
to
you?
Oh, yeah, I lost that one, Dave.
And then you said, yes. You know, hey, you mocking him for his Stanford. Nice win over Cal.
Yeah, you did say that.
I did. Well, the quad A green injury has hurt him, and so they're trying to get that figured out. And they better get it figured out in a hurry because the Tinkles are in town. You knew that, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Is it about did we overestimate how good they are, or is it about who they're missing?
Tinkletown.
I love those guys. Yeah. I love Wayne Tinkle. I love his kid. I love the Beavers. I hope they win tonight.
Yeah, they're 12-4.
Yeah, so it's.
Did we overestimate the ability of this team?
Did I don't
get too
think
excited
we did.
About
no,
Isaiah
I don't
Stewart
think we did. I mean, the talent that they have.
It's about who they're missing.
Yeah, I just think that green thing really set them back, and so they'll get it figured out. Though Mike Hopkins is a great coach, but I was surprised when they go ahead and lose to Stanford, but that Cal team isn't good, and you lost to Cal.
Did they beat the Cougs?
Who?
Cal.
Cal beat. Oh yeah. Yeah, and the Cougs have Oregon tonight. The Ducks are number 8 in the country, and we're 10-point underdog there. But I'm hoping that we'll be competitive tonight, and I'm really looking forward to the game on Saturday when Klay Thompson and Steph Curry are going to be in town.
All right, Nick Rolovich was introduced today as the new Washington State head football coach. Here is a snippet from his press conference.
I'm honored to coach at a place that has such a good history of great players, and I'm not going to mention any. Because I'm going to leave someone out and they might get mad at me. But I want to tell you, it doesn't matter if you were an all Pac-10 player back in the day, NFL pro bowler, or just a scout team player that gave everything you had for this football program. You're always welcome back home.
Wow, that's cool. I like him so far.
I like the sound of this guy already. Not that way at Stanford, though, is it, Dave?
No, not for me.
I like that video you posted of him throwing out the first pitch. He had his hair cut like Ricky Vaughn. He was doing the whole wild thing from Major League. And
yeah, I think he's like going to be loose. I think he's going to be a player's coach. I think you got the athletes over there. And he talked about that these are the best athletes that he's ever coached. And coming in there from Hawaii with the run and shoot, I think it's going to be a good fit. And I'm hoping he's bringing some of his Hawaii assistant coaches with him. I noticed that the special teams coach and the offensive coordinator and the quarterback's coach. I'm hoping... Well, that he leaves his defensive coaches in Honolulu and finds some better coaches here.
I told you I posted on Twitter, I retweeted a 710 tweet where it announced that he had been hired, and I just said, what do you think, Cook fans? And it was a lot of, it seemed kind of 50-50, nobody overly excited or overly angry. It was just sort of in the middle, but those that were critical were saying it's going to be more of the same, still not going to have a defense, still not going to run the ball. The same.
No, they're going to run the ball. I mean,
that was just what I was getting back.
Well, they're going to. I mean, Max Borgi's excited about this new coach because he's going to, and I'm sure they're going to throw to him out of the backfield too. But I think he's going to get more handoffs in this offense. And
what about the defense? You worry about that?
Yeah, I'm worried about the defense, but I think it's going to be. I don't think we can go worse. I think it's going to get better. And I just can't.
One way
tell
of
you,
looking at it.
I can't tell you how excited I am that Mike Leach is gone and this guy's taken over. That part of it for me, I'm 100% going for the Cougs. I'm going to get season tickets. I'm going to donate to the Cougar Athletic Fund. I haven't done that, and I'm just encourage everybody else to do it too. I can't wait for this new era of Cougar football to get going.
What's the over-under of wins at Mississippi State?
Probably 6 or 7, depending on their non-conference schedule.
Yeah, I've got no idea how
six
good that team is. But
6 would be my guess.
Or how many years he lasts, I should say.
Over-under would be what?
3. Leach.
Three.
How long is his
deal? He's 57. Clayton always talks about maybe getting an NFL opportunity. That might be something he'd look at. And I think he's going to realize how much more difficult it is being in that SEC and the microscope you're under compared to being in Pullman.
Oh, he's going to be yelling at some reporters down there.
Yeah, let me tell you something. His fat, lazy, dumb player thing that he does, that doesn't play in the NFL. That's not going to work with multimillionaires. That's not going to go well.
Probably not.
All right, coming up, the MLB sign-stealing scandal continues to grow, and now one of Dave's all-time favorite players has been implicated in a big way. We're going to talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at 4 o'clock, the Professor John Clayton will join us here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle. Meanwhile, it's a dark day in the world of Dave Wyman because one of his favorite players is being implicated in this cheating scandal that involves the Astros, the Red Sox, and now the Mets, who agreed to part ways with manager Carlos Beltran before he ever managed a single moment of this team.
But anybody who was involved in that Houston Astro.
Yeah, and his name, I guess, was brought up specifically in the investigation, but Jose Altuve now is being accused of wearing a device that would buzz based on the pitch that he was seeing, you know, buzz once for a fastball, buzz two for a curveball, what have you. And people are posting pictures of him. You know, James posted a picture of what looks like a fold in the fabric to me, but is sort of highlighted it as.
Depends on what you want to see.
Yeah, I suppose you're going to see what you want to see, but it's a fold in the fabric. They may have been wearing buzzers. I mean, listen, they're guilty because that was happening. And there's nobody in that dugout that was in the dark. I'm sorry. I'm not going to believe that somebody's on that bench just mindlessly going, why are they hitting the trash can? Why do they keep doing that? I don't get it. Everybody's on board. So you're guilty in that sense. Were you wearing a buzzer? Maybe they were. I mean,
at the end of the year, Altuve was like, oh, that's what that garbage banging thing
was.
Yeah,
yeah. Like he's just in the dark the whole year.
That's what I like to believe, Bob.
Well,
he's my hero.
And now everybody's showing video of him running after a home run. He's running to home plate. The whole team's there to greet him, and he's holding on to his jersey.
He says, yeah, I remember that very specifically. Don't rip my jersey off.
Series clinching home run. Yeah.
Yeah.
Against the Yankees.
And he says it was because of his wife, you know, she wanted the jersey. And then there's people that are trying to read his lips saying, I'm got a wire or something like that. But look, the reason why Altuve is such a good hitter is because the baseball looks like a volleyball to him.
So you're going to stand by your man no matter what here, Dave.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was having this conversation with Shannon Dreyer, and I'm like, okay, and I don't always have to compare baseball to football. Well, yes, I do. So I was asking, I was asking the question, I mean, how big of a deal is that? And what Shannon was saying is that it's more about some of the pitches that you don't swing at, you know, also. Mm-hmm. But, you know, is that the equivalent to knowing what play's coming?
Yeah.
Do you know, like, if you know, if you're a linebacker, especially in this day and age where, and a lot of times it's a read thing because they do the RPO, you know, run pass option, but still on a lot of those plays, if you knew exactly where it was going, yeah,
you're going to snuff out that play.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a bad thing with baseball. I think they're doing the right thing and going really aggressively at, you know, firing these guys and getting rid of it. That tarnishes a sport. It's the same thing as the gambling thing. And, you know, with Pete Rose.
To me, this is worse because by all accounts, Pete was betting on his team to win. If he's betting on his team
that's
to lose,
says, yeah.
That's different. Well, I
well the only thing is about that, and I agree with you. I think Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame, but you treat your pitching staff differently.
Potentially, but you're still trying to win. He's not out there tanking a game so he can win a bet. That's different.
Yeah.
But let's say
he's got $50,000 on one game. He's going to use his bullpen a little differently than if he had $10,000 on
You're right. And I'm in no way, shape, or form excusing it. But to me, there is a different level if he were betting on his team to lose. So, hey, I'm gonna pull this guy or I'm not going to start this guy or I'm gonna, whatever. Yeah. This is a different level of cheating. Here's Altuve, by the way, talking to Ken Rosenthal after game six, talking about the jersey, not wanting it to get ripped.
You asked your teammates not to tear your shirt. Why was that?
I don't know. I
I'm too shy. Last time they did that, I got in trouble with my wife.
That laugh. He said, I'm too shy at first.
Yeah, and then that little, I still like the guy, but they're all guilty. I'm sorry. They're all part of it. And here's Tim Kirkshen talking about, and this is what we, you know, we talked about this when it was first happening. Are we to believe that the Astros are the only team that could possibly think to do something like this? And he's talking about other teams being involved.
I had one person tell me, someone who might know, that half the teams are doing something using electronics in order to steal signs. However, I was told the Astros went way beyond anybody else, including the 2018 Red Sox, to steal their signs. And the most important part of this, I believe, is that the commissioner, Rob Manfred, who's a lawyer, by the way, basically wrote a law in 2017 in September saying, after the Apple Watch controversy, that if we have any more of these shenanigans, there's going to be stiff penalties. Very harsh, and he followed through because the Astros not only didn't listen, they continued to do this through the World Series.
So maybe they did take it further than any other team, but obviously there are other teams doing things that are untoward, that are against the rules. So I don't want to just pile on just the Astros because it's silly to believe they're the only, and obviously the Red Sox are now involved. And I'm having a hard time getting to a point where I want to, how do I feel about the players? Because as much as they're sort of a rival, they're same division, but, you know, hate the Astros yet. I love George Springer, man. That guy's a heck of a player. I love Altuve. He's a heck of a player. They got so many good players that seem likable, but
Bregman's unlikable.
You're all involved.
Yeah.
They're all a part of this. They're all a part of this. They were all in the know. So how do you punish just the GM, just the manager? The players were the ones in there banging. They're the ones in there.
Yeah.
Getting this thing going. Yeah, the manager, they're all part of it, but they're the ones actually pulling this off. So how do they walk out of this unscathed?
Shouldn't. And maybe we're gonna find out more about if they get to the bottom of this with Altuve and with any other players that had some sort of a buzzer.
You still root for him, though, the same way? Do you look at him differently now? Altuve. Do you look at him a little differently now?
Yeah, I would. It's cheating is cheating, right? And it just took it too far, you know? And we were talking in there in the sports bit about this, like, it's gamesmanship when you have a guy on second base, right? And then same thing with in the NFL. And there's ways to avoid that because, you know, I would get signals from the sidelines and I'd have a wristband. And it would, you know, only I could see the defense. There was no signals other than him flashing the number that was corresponded on my wristband. So, you know, but if you're picking off their plays when they're out there, you know, making their arms go different ways and everything, or they're holding up those signs, then, you know, that's considered fair game, right?
Yeah.
But when you're using electronics, and you know what it reminded
me
of?
Which is why every coach holds that card in front of their mouth now.
Yeah, you don't want anybody to
Everybody's reading their lips. That's why catchers are holding the middle.
When they go to the mound, having the glove over their mouths. Yeah,
but this thing reminded me of the movie Casino. Do you remember that where they took the guy's hand and they smashed his hand? But he had a buddy who was behind him on a card table.
Looking at
And he could see the dealer's cards, and then he was clicking something on his leg that was a buzzer on the other guy's leg. And, you know, what they did to him?
Yeah.
It took a ball peen hammer to his hand.
So which hand do you shuffle your chips with there?
Or you click the buzzer with. So, yeah, this is a really bad thing, man. So, I'm not recommending that they smash their hands. But I'm just saying that
but
you know,
it impacts how you view the guy moving forward that you rooted for.
It's really hardcore cheating.
And what if that were the Mariners finally made it to World Series and won? And then this comes out that they were doing something like this.
Yeah, it'd be disappointing. I was just sitting here. It might be kind of corny, but you don't want your own kids doing that, do you? Like if Mikey and Stevie were on the Astros and they told me about this and that, yeah, they were involved in cheating, I'd be like, well, what are you doing? You weren't raised that way. And I know it's a completely different level, but it bothers me on so many levels that I go back to golf. One of the things I like about golf is, you know, these guys self-police themselves out there. And it's just not cool.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. And I know you're trying to win, but
just makes you think
win within the rules. And then how do you feel like if you win while you're cheating, doesn't that take away from it just on a personal level that you didn't do it by the rules? You
had an advantage.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because it's a sport that needs as much support as it can get. We're talking about baseball dying and it's no longer cool to the kids and it's, you know, it's losing its appeal and people predicting 30 years from now it may not even exist, whatever, you know, you can believe it or not. But things like this.
What's even worse when it's a team that doesn't need to cheat to win? They're better than you anyway.
It certainly seems so. All right, coming up, who are we pulling for this weekend? Is there any reason Seahawks fans should root for somebody specific? Jim thinks the Titans because it backs up Pete's style. That works, right?
Correct.
The Titans, and then you can't root for the 49ers as a Seahawks fan, right? We'll talk about that coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle. Coming up at 4 o'clock, the Professor John Clayton will join us on the program. Who should we be pulling for this weekend? It feels obvious to me in the NFC anyway, Jim. Is there a case to be made for pulling for the 49ers? Because I'd love to hear it. I am rooting for the Packers in the biggest way as if I were a Packer fan my whole life.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn on that.
You're torn?
Yeah, I'm torn on that game. Yeah, I watch it, and I'm going to be in Las Vegas this weekend, and it'll probably be whether I take San Francisco -7 or Green Bay +7, and I'll be in a sports book in Las Vegas, and it'll all depend on which team I go with.
Seven?
Yeah, it's 7. 7 or 7.5.
Feels like it should be more.
Yeah, it was 37-8 last time.
I don't think the Packers are going to win, but I'm rooting for them to win. If I had to bet, I would bet on the 49ers if we're just talking about making money. But
yeah, Dave,
who do you want to? If you weren't betting money, who do you want to win?
Well, Green Bay, because I still like Aaron Rodgers. I know a lot of people don't. And then you can make a case. You don't want to root for a team in your division. You can make a case, too, for the team that eliminated you. You'd like to see them go the rest of the way. But, Dave, I'm with you. I was kind of looking at that point spread going, and then all of us who remember watching that game, Green Bay at San Francisco that Sunday night, they didn't even belong on the same field with the 49ers. And so what has changed since then? And the Niners have even gotten healthier on defense with Quan Alexander and D Ford coming back.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think Jaquiski Tart also is back. So, yeah, I don't see the Packers winning that game. And I'll say this. I wouldn't mind seeing Aaron Rodgers and Jimmy Graham with disappointed looks on their faces afterwards.
Well, it'd be tough to tell with Rodgers because his face never changes.
That's true.
People are texting in.
He's like Jim Caldwell. Remember Jim Caldwell?
Yeah.
The coach of the Colts.
Lions.
This is him happy. This is him elated. This is him sad. This is him disappointed. All the same.
But people are saying they'd like to see the 49ers. You can text in 710-710 to the Coors Light text line saying they'd like to see the Niners win, get to the Super Bowl, and lose. To lose on that stage and then have the Super Bowl hangover.
Yeah, there's a good point, because after you lose a Super Bowl, we all know that it can be tough to get over. But, you know, the thing that, to me, you used the word, Bob, insufferable.
Yeah.
That describes Richard Sherman.
Yeah.
And then, look, he's a great player and everything, and I think we all agree with that. But will you be able to stand seeing him with another Super Bowl ring?
Nah, he's saying it to you during the break. He was my favorite player on this team to watch, to speak with. He was just so light and fun, and that changed while he was here. This is not because he now wears a Niners uniform. We were aware of what his presence was in the locker room. It wasn't very positive. We saw him screaming at coaches on the sideline. We just saw he just became a different guy here, and it became a little bit toxic. And it was unfortunate because of how much fun he used to be. And then now you watch him in these post-game press conferences, and it's just the chip that he's had that's worked for him his whole career has become so big that it is insufferable. You guys are all trying to find excuses why I'm so great. Oh, I'm a zone coverage guy. I'm not a man guy. Well, but it's just his whole mission in life is just to stick it to everybody. It's like, dude, nobody is saying you're bad. Everybody acknowledges how great you are, and you're revered. You'll be in the Hall of Fame. I don't know.
Well, especially when he
becomes tough to deal with.
Especially when he turned on Pete.
Yeah.
I mean, when he was like, oh, the kumbaya thing. I mean, that's when it really – I understand, you know, heat of the moment, the screaming thing against Atlanta, you know, when there was some kind of a discrepancy of how they were going to play a certain defense.
He was the only one that was on the other page, apparently, though.
Yeah. He was yelling and screaming about
it. Kelsey McCray
I don't know about that, because a lot of times you'll practice something during practice. Well, it's not even worth getting into. But look, he's just once he started, you know, yelling and screaming at the coaches, that's where I was like, okay, you draw the line there. And, you know, and especially kind of that was undermining to Pete Carroll, you know. So, yeah, he's a really good player. I've said I think he's the best tackling corner.
Oh, I love that part of his game.
Yeah.
I love how physical he is.
In NFL history.
He's the anti-Deion.
You know what's funny is whenever I say that, people freak out. You know, that he's not the best tackler. Okay, well, tell me who are the best tackling corners in the – I mean, corners typically – I mean, it's not Deion Sanders.
No.
I'll tell you that much.
He was noted for not wanting to get the uniform dirty. He didn't want to hit anybody.
But, you know, that's what – Trey Flowers is that way, and that's what I admire about him too, is that he's a tough guy. He used to be a safety. But, yeah, so, I mean, Sherm is a great player, and I just think it doesn't really matter because I think the 49ers are going to win the whole thing.
Who do we want in the AFC?
The Titans. You know, Pete Carroll's going to be sitting there in Medina or wherever his house is watching that game going, go Titans. Because if they win, it'll basically validate what he's been doing.
Because they're running.
Trying to run the ball, play tough defense.
I love their story.
Style,
but I love Patrick Mahomes, too, though.
No, I love Mahomes, too.
I'm
but
torn
I,
on that
just
game.
For the Seahawks' sake, I'd like to see Derrick Henry just continue to get 30 carries and run for 200 yards and take it all the way to the Super Bowl and then beat the 49ers in the next game. I mean, what if the Titans beat the 49ers?
Well,
then you'd look
the
at then no one would be complaining about Pete Carroll anymore. You know what? That might work doing that whole running thing.
Well, I think Dave's already proven the point that the running teams, the dominant running teams, are the ones you're seeing in the postseason. I don't know that you have, you know, the league's leading rusher needs to cement that opinion. I mean, he's great. He's fun to watch. I won't be disappointed in that game. I just want to see a good game. But I think I'm leaning toward the Chiefs. I'm such a big fan of Mahomes. I love that guy's game. I think he seems like a great guy.
Remember, right. He had a dislocated kneecap, too, during the season.
Yeah, he's a tough guy, too, man. I mean, he's just, I don't know. He's hard for me not to root for, but I don't have anything against the Titans by any stretch.
It's an interesting matchup.
It is. I mean, what's the spread on it? You probably know since you'll be in
Vegas. 7 or 7.5. I think the Titans are getting 7, and Green Bay might be 7.5 now.
Mm. All right.
I was telling the Packer fans, you know, that were screaming and yelling at us when we were doing the post game. You're going to go out there and get your butts whooped. So
it already happened once.
Enjoy.
Yeah. And somebody's saying, go Titans. I can't cheer for a team that looks the other way at a child beater. That's a fair point.
Was it Tyreek Hill?
Tyreek Hill.
Right. Yeah, I was going to bring his name up.
Yeah, he's trash. That's a good point. That makes it tough. Mine's more singular about Mahomes himself. The Chiefs team, I don't really care. But that's a good point. Yeah, now I have to reconsider.
You can root for Andy Reid too, right?
Yeah, he seems like a nice good guys. Dude. He's in Mahomes. Yeah, but the Tyreek Hill, I forgot all about that. That's unfortunate that you brought that up. All right, coming up, the Professor John Clayton will be joining us. We'll talk some football with him next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.